Johnny Mack with your daily comedy news. My voice is more or less back, thanks to those of you who reached out and were like, hey, last couple podcasts sound a little suspect. Yes, they did. From late night, Vladimir Putin is still planning to attend the G20 summit later this year. Jimmy Fallon said it explains this year's theme, which is awkward. Fallon, seriously, what's Putin doing? It's like getting kicked out of high school and then showing up for the reunion. Yeah, it'll backfire on Putin when he realizes it's not a G20 summit, it's an intervention. Jon Stewart was on the Howard Stern show and talked about Pete Davidson. He said, I know Pete real well. He's just a kid trying to live his life. He's one of my favorite people. He's just a smart, funny kid trying to live his life. I think he's doing the best you can in that situation when you're dealing with something that's so explosive and loaded with all kinds of other things. I just love that kid. He and I know each other from comedy, from going on the road. Chappelle and I were doing gigs in Boston and Houston, and Pete Davidson came out and performed. And him and John Mulaney work near where I live in Jersey, so I'd go buy pizza from a place and would go hang out. We just became friends from that. I always have a very paternal instinct on those guys because I've seen too many of my friends get in trouble and some of them die, and you don't want that. It's an effed up business. Okay, maybe my voice isn't all the way back. I hear the deep rasp in it. Jen Kirkman tweets, my last stand-up comedy album, which is called OK Gen X, it's out now. The album is a must-have if you're Gen X, or if you want to hear jokes about the time Louis asked if he could show me his stuff. I assume she means Mr. CK there. Amy Schumer is hosting the Oscars tomorrow for some reason. She went on Ellen, and as People writes it, Ellen DeGeneres was shocked when Amy Schumer shimmied onto the set dressed like Ellen. That's right. Ellen had no idea that Amy was going to do this bit. Amy totally wildcatted this bit where she dressed exactly like Ellen in a white Oxford shirt, a white bomber jacket, jeans, and neutral Nike sneakers, plus with an Ellen DeGeneres style wig. Ellen had no idea. Amy provided her own costuming, her own wig. She was backstage. She got dressed. She did her own makeup. No one on the staff knew this. No one mentioned it to Ellen. Ellen was totally, totally surprised by this. Ellen asked her guest, how did this happen? Amy Schumer joked, am I not taking over the show? I was so confused because they invited me and now you're kind of wrapping things up. It's the final season of the show. So I thought I was going to become you and take over the show. Is that not the plan? No, it is not the plan. That was the bit. Ashley Soren wrote for Runner Online. Ashley saw John Mulaney's show and said, I enjoyed the show. Found myself laughing multiple times, but after walking out of theater, felt it was a weird experience that made me feel awkward during several bits of the show. It was clear to me that Mulaney had changed drastically and used his act to express that. Many others felt the same way, such as Taylor Gray from Neek.net. Gray had attended the Mulaney show in Atlanta in September 2021. Gray wrote, sauntering onto the stage of the Roxy, Mulaney set the tone for that night by pleading with the audience to buy his merchandise out in the lobby, including a shirt with the phrase, I saw him right after he got out of rehab, emblazoned on the chest. A few minutes into the set made it very clear that the John Mulaney standing in front of the crowd was a changed man. Soren writes, the lack of polish was one of the first things I personally noticed as Mulaney was not dressed up in his usual suit and tie, and he immediately opened the show with his personal life. Lila Jordan in Pace magazine wrote, the comedian is older and trying to stay sober, so he's creating a new type of persona that adapts to his new reality. IndieWire asked John Oliver, how much time do you spend rehearsing the show to convince yourself that you're ready? Oliver, it's a good question, because we're working on six stories at one time, right? Those main stories are six-week processes. They're all in different stages of development. It's like degrees of worry about each one that you're in. And the thing actually that I missed the most during the pandemic has been not being able to read those stories early on just to our staff in a room in our office. That was incredibly helpful to us because you get a sense of whether the story made any sense, whether it was interesting, whether there were parts of it that were confusing that needed to be much more clear, whether we were over-explaining certain things. It's massively useful to be able to learn those things before doing it to an audience. There are gradations of silence, right? There's engaged silence and bored and confused silence. You want as much of the first and as little as you can of the second. Generally, you don't want to find that out as you're recording a show. Vulture wrote about That's the News, a daily wartime comedy show streamed on YouTube by Kyiv's Underground Stand-Up Club. Ukraine's largest comedy club pivoted from in-person shows to live streams on March 6, with comedians delivering material from their homes or temporary shelters. Every That's the News episode begins with an improvised ceremony of raising the Ukrainian flag, except what the host slowly raises above his head to the beat of the Ukrainian military march is his cat Marquee, not the flag. The show is freewheeling, but there are some staples, including a monologue and a short joke. For example, what's the difference between a Russian and a Ukrainian plane? The Russian is always followed by the rocket. The show traditionally ends with a plea to give to two charitable causes, the Comeback Alive Fund to support the Ukrainian military and You Animals to take care of pets during war. Vulture writes, what gives the show most of its structure are new stories about Russian occupying forces suffering losses in Ukraine. For example, during one stream, the comedians discussed Ukrainian farmers stealing Russian tanks. They share urban legends, too, like the one about a Ukrainian babushka who invites Russian soldiers to tea, only to poison them. The host says, these people came to our land with a mission to kill us. They're murdering innocent people, striking churches and hospitals, so I don't worry about offending some guy in Russia. There's a new episode of the podcast, The Best Song Ever This Week, available in that feed. This week's Best Song Ever is Before the Last Teardrop Falls. If you're not hip to that show, every week, music journalist Scott Frampton picks one song and tells you why it's awesome and a little story about the song. I find the stories incredibly compelling. This week's song is Freddie Fender's Before the Last Teardrop Falls. Scott Frampton says it's the first bilingual pop hit that launched a country career for Freddie Fender, which wasn't at all what he wanted. If you would like to support this podcast, I've added a freemium option on Apple Podcasts. You can become a premium subscriber for $4.99 a month. You can become a paid subscriber. You get the episodes commercial-free, plus early releases and bonus episodes. If you don't want to do that, nothing has changed here. If you do want to do that, $4.99 a month, open up Daily Comedy News on Apple Podcasts, and you will see the option. And there's always the option to buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/dailycomedynews. You can donate $5 in the tip jar. I will take your $5, and I will go to the National Donuts chain and I will get a large iced coffee with caramel and milk. You can hear this one. The ice has quite melted. I'm a little slow on my drinking of it today, but always like me an iced coffee. From the BBC, when UK comedian Johnny Pelham told his therapist he was considering trying out some new material about how he was sexually abused as an 8-year-old boy. The professional advised against it. Pelham said, "Why? Do you think it'll be too traumatic? Will it mess me up?" The reply, "No, it just doesn't sound very funny." Pelham is now 30 and he said, "I naturally write autobiographical stuff and I think that's just what was going on in my life, really. It wasn't that I was particularly set out to write a political show. I was trying to do a lot of things. I was trying to get into my first relationship. I was trying to be more present in my life. I was going to therapy. Those felt like things I was talking about, and the only way for the audience to understand them, really, was to talk about the reason why that was all happening. And I never want to be flippant about abuse because it's such a serious thing, but I also want to say there are different ways to discuss this. My way of talking about it is just saying this can happen to you, and it's obviously an incredibly damaging thing, but it doesn't have to be life-defining completely." Johnny Pelham's show is called Off Limits. It is touring the UK now through April 30th. Vulture was quite impressed by Maria Bamford's recent appearance on James Corden's show. Vulture writes, even veteran comics with a few late-night appearances under their belt usually won't stray far, assuming that anyone watching, especially the tourists in front of them, don't know who the heck they are. When comedians do push things, other comics take notice. Patton Oswalt praised Gary Gulman for doing his state abbreviations bit on Conan in 2016, knowing that if the audience didn't get it right away, it would be 5 minutes of silence. On March 10th, James Corden introduced the delightful Maria Bamford. Vulture writes, Bamford's mom, Marilyn, died in late 2020 from lung cancer. Considering that Maria's impression of Marilyn is a beloved fixture of her act, it's been a major part of the set she's been working on during the pandemic. Vulture says, the entire set is incredible, but I want to focus for a second on the first 30 seconds and what she does to make the rest of the set work. A set in which she talks exclusively about her mother dying from lung cancer. Quoting Maria, "You guys, some people love life. I've always been on the fence about the whole thing." She speeds through so people laugh but don't think too deeply as she continues, "I could go at any time, medium laugh, still building, still fairly deadpan. What I really like is a sharp blow to the head," she says before her voice switches to cartoonishly, midwesternly cheerful, "that I do not see coming." She laughs maniacally. She gets a big laugh from the tourists. What she does here is find a way to introduce death as not that big of a deal. The next joke starts, "My mom loved life," Vulture adds. Remember, this audience probably doesn't know Bamford and almost definitely doesn't know her mom has died. This is how she tells them, subtly, gently. It's a phrase you probably hear in 90% of eulogies, and this set is a eulogy. She respects the audience's intelligence enough not to blurt out, "My mom died," and knows that would just get her performed sympathy. She wrote, "My mom loved life," and it brings the audience in, creating a genuine feeling of closeness with Maria. All the TV BS fades away, and for a moment, so does the horror still happening outside the studio. For the next 4 minutes, it's just one person telling you they love their mom, and you get it. I laughed until I cried, and cried until I laughed. That's really great. You'll find that piece on Vulture, and that is your comedy news for today. you like the show ad-free, premium subscription on Apple Podcasts or $4.99. Other than that, follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your shows. See you here tomorrow, normal episode.